You may have heard that Sunday mornings, 6:30 a.m., I know it's early, but this is podcasted, I do a show called This Week in Wealth, and my co-host is Tom Fortino of Alpha Wealth Group, and he joins me now, and here we are, Tom, and it's not 6:30 in the morning.
No, it's kind of nice, but, you know, there's more people up, I think, at 6:30 than we think.
So. I'm usually up at 6:30 and well before that. It's true. But yeah, no, there's lots and lots of people who are up on Sunday mornings at 6:30. And I hope all of you will join us when we talk. Tom and I have had some great conversations over the last quarter. The whole point of the show is to really talk about money and the news of the week and what's going on. And gosh, every week, Tom, I think to myself, what are we going to talk about this week? But there's so much to talk about when it comes to money.
There's always things to talk about. It's ever-changing. You know, we talk about the different rules when it comes to your retirement plans. I think we talked about that the other week. The 401k plans, how do we deal with those? We have taxes that we have to deal with. The market's at all-time highs. You know, there is never a shortage of things that are happening that we have to deal with that impact our retirement plan.
No, it's so true. And even like little nitty-gritty things, you know, like a Roth 401k. You know, people are like, well, what's a Roth 401k? I thought it was just a 401k or a Roth IRA. Like, where did they start mixing these things together? And they're just little kind of things that you may not even realize that could give you a real leg up when it comes to retirement. Which, you know, I wanted to talk about some of that today because I think, you know, it's a great time to, you know, as people are going back to school, they're getting ready for the last, you know, couple of months of the year. I don't want to wish away our summer, although there are a lot of people who are really tired of 90-degree weather. But, you know, we're not going to feel that way in December. But, you know, we're coming up to starting to think about the end of the year, and you think about your taxes, and you think about what you've put away for retirement. And I'm wondering if you can give me a couple, and give all of our listeners, a couple of good ideas on maybe how to manage the end of 2021 and some of the things you might want to think about if you're doing some retirement planning.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Elise. There's these deadlines that we deal with. We're all familiar with the deadline of April 15th, right? Not such a good deadline, but it's a deadline. But when you talk about end of the year, you have until the end of the year to contribute to your 401k plan, right? The limits are up to, and you made a comment about the 401k, many times the biggest asset, you can put up to $26,000 a year if you're over age 50, up to $19,500 if you're under age 50. You have until the end of the year to do that. So this is a good call to action. Say, hey, find out what your contributions are. Should you up them before the end of the year? You can accelerate them the last few months. So, again, this is the end of the year thing. You made the comment about Roth. So I'll play off some of these things. You made some great comments. Roth 401ks, maybe you can say, hey, maybe till the end of the year, I'm going to switch to a Roth 401k from my traditional 401k because I want the rest of my contributions for the year going into a tax-free account. So those monies will never be taxed for the rest of my life.
Right.
And so Roth conversions, you have until the end of the year to do a Roth conversion. So if it just so happens, especially in this weird economic time we live in, maybe your income is a little lower this year. Maybe there's an opportunity to do a Roth conversion for 2021. Again, you have until the end of the year. So there's a number of things that we can be doing, and there's more than just that, but just a few to start the conversation.
Yeah, right. No, absolutely. You know, another thing that I think people don't even realize is there are just, you know, small little things that you can do by the end of the year that really could change the tax structure. And one of my favorite things that I've promoted over the years, making an extra mortgage payment. So if you're able to write down your, you know, taxes and take a mortgage deduction, not everybody can because the number's so big now, the standard deduction, but if you're able to, accelerating that payment can really help.
Yeah, there's so many things. You're correct. This is being aware, and I know it's tough when we talk taxes. Who wants to pull out their tax returns and, you know, sit down and review them? But
oh, it's what I do every Sunday after our show because you've reminded me how important that is.
Oh, yeah. If you're doing that, at least don't admit to it, at least, okay?
Oh, does that sound bad? Okay.
No, you're being responsible, so I think that's a good thing. But, no, there's so many things, and, of course, in just a 5-minute, 10-minute discussion, we can't cover it, but these are things that are going to be impactful. These little things, you know, nickels and dimes, they add up. And so, sure, you can look at your deductions. Can you make that extra payment depending on where you are from a tax year? Because that's going to come off your taxable income if you can make that extra payment. And these are things that you start doing every year. The other thing I would make a comment here, Elise, is, you know, write these down every year. Maybe revisit this end of year planning checklist. What can I do this year? And so it almost becomes habit. And to your point, these little things, wow, you know, 6, 7 years, 5 years, even a few years down the road, they start to add up, and they, you start to see the impact in your planning. You'll be happy, you know, when you look back and say, wow, I'm glad I did these things each year for the past 4, 5, 6 years, because they've made a, they've made a difference in my planning. So that's so important. I agree with that.
It is. It's funny because we talk a lot about, you know, deferred gratification, the idea that, you know, little things that you do early on in your career, like just maxing out your 401k or, you know, at least putting in as much as the match. I mean, it may seem like just a lot of money to be not hitting your pocket in a time when you really need it. But I'm here to tell you, you're always going to need it. There's always going to be something going on in your life. And if you don't make saving a priority when it comes time to start your retirement planning, and by that I don't mean the day you're actually leaving your job and retiring. I mean, you know, a good 10, 15 years out, you're going to be sorry that, you know, 15 or 20 years before that, you didn't actually start the process and start putting some cash away and start learning how to live on less. Hey, Tom, when you talk to some of your clients, do you find that they really don't get this idea of sort of living down or living on less as they go into their retiring years?
Well, I think here's what I would say. A couple points to be made there is that I think some of them realize, most of them realize, hey, I may be spending less money, but I think the most important takeaway from what you're saying is, and I think we've discussed it before, is how many people really know what they need in retirement, right? There's certain expenses that don't ever go away, whether it's a mortgage payment or it's property taxes, healthcare, transportation, clothes. You know, this is, I think, the biggest takeaway from what are your expenses really going to be in retirement?
Yeah, no, so. I think that's fair. And also, I want to hit on this, and we just have a minute now, and then we'll come back after the break. But I want to talk about this idea of the 6% increase in Social Security, because it's the largest increase maybe ever. I don't know what the historical number is. Maybe it's certainly in my years of covering the financial markets, I think 6% is the biggest increase. And yet, all the costs for seniors have gone up so dramatically while interest rates have stayed like near zero. You know, what's your take on that? I mean, is the 6% going to make up for, you know, the increased costs people are going to be experiencing?
Well, that's interesting you bring that up, right? Because, you know, close to 90% of people over 65 are receiving Social Security. This is pretty impactful. You know, there's always been an argument whether or not this 6% or whatever the cost of living, I think it was 2.8% last year. So now it's on top of that. We're getting this higher, potentially 6 in October. There's health care costs. There's a lot of costs that are not considered in there. So while it's always a welcomed increase, you know, it may or may not cover. In addition to that, we have to remember now Medicare costs, that premium you pay, that comes out of the Social Security checks now. So this is just, you know, going back to what we said, this just goes back to what you said before the conversation even started. There's so many things that you have to consider when you go into retirement, and certainly this is one of them. It will be a welcome increase, but I don't know. I'm concerned about some of these inflation numbers, and are they really, quote-unquote, transitory?
Yeah, I know. We did talk about that. The whole inflation, there's really a growing body of evidence, and I think this is one of the things that the Federal Reserve is starting to recognize in a more public way, is that while we're not going to maybe see 6% or 7% inflation in everything, we are seeing, you know, a little bit higher than the Fed's target of 2%, maybe something at 3 or 4%, and that's still, they're worried about not, you know, really sort of maintaining and focusing on, so it doesn't turn into something that's that's running away. You know, when we come back, Tom, let's talk a little bit more about that and about what people should maybe think about now that we've got the stock markets hitting record highs again. S&P 500, NASDAQ closed at new record highs this afternoon. And I'd love to get your take on whether we just ride all that off into the sunset of our retirements and sell off chunks as we need it, or if we need to think about a strategy that helps us convert something back into maybe something a little bit safer or more manageable. So we'll talk about that with Tom Fortino of Alpha Wealth Group next. Stay tuned for more of the Anna DeVellante Show here on 720 WGN. We've been talking about back to school. Right now we're on with Tom Fortino of Alpha Wealth Group. So Tom, S&P 500 and NASDAQ hit record highs. Tech stocks are climbing. Every week I can't imagine that we're going to have another record high, and yet we have. It's a little bit scary, I think. I know for people who are getting ready for retirement, you know, there's this whole pull to maybe pick something a little bit less, less risky, let's put it that way, sure, than investing in tech stocks may portend. And yet, you're going to need all of that, because if you retire at 65 or 70 or even 75, you could still have another 20 years in retirement, and you're going to need to power through. So since you work with all kinds of different retirees and people who are retirement, you know, ready planning at Alpha Wealth Group, tell me a little bit about how you help people walk that line between keeping things invested in, say, the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ, in stocks or in mutual funds, and balancing that with a portfolio that might feel safer, let's say with bonds, but it isn't been, mm-hmm. it hasn't been at least in the last 20 years.
Yeah, we're in a really interesting time here, because, and again, we've had these discussions, Elise, if you're in a 10-year bond, which is slightly under 1.3%, and we couple that with the inflation discussion we had, you have a negative real rate of return, right? Mm-hmm. And so
right.
even the aggregate bond index, if you look at that, it's negative year to date. It's down almost 1.7, where the S&P is up 20%. So the question is, and I pose this question, why would you ever be in bonds, especially now? So, but on the other hand, when you're in that...
Wait, are you going to answer that question? Why would you ever be in bonds, especially now? Are you just going to leave us hanging here?
Well, that's a good question. The answer is, and people will typically give, when I can pull up a chart. It's fun, interesting. Yahoo has a great, I think it's very simple and easy to use for anyone. You go to Yahoo Finance, just chart out bonds, the S&P and the bond index. You'll see a flat line and then a line going straight, almost straight up over the past 2 years. But the bonds, you know, if you're going to own some type of fixed investment, let me relate it to that. Why would you own that if you're not owning it for growth? You're owning it for protection on the downside, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why you're going to own some type of fixed investment. Are there bond alternatives? Yes, some, but for someone, for me to suggest someone who's 2 years out from retirement or a year out from retirement, especially, here's the key thing. If you need that money for income, that's one of the key factors. You know, to be 100% in the market, I know it's tempting, but, that you have to be very careful if you're going to have to draw money out of that if that market goes down significantly. So, you know, you could have some fixed alternatives, and I would never be averse to that on a percentage of your portfolio. Again, to protect on the downside, you're not owning it for growth. You're owning it more for a protection piece, because historically it has less volatility, right? So
yeah,
that would be my idea. I mean, you can go into dividend paying. I would say if right now things like you mentioned technology. Well, maybe you try to take a look at your growth pieces and say, I'm going to own some dividend paying stocks. I think that's a good move. You might want to add some hard assets. I'm not averse to owning a small part in gold, and I'm talking percentages, not large percentages. So there's things that you can do to try to minimize on the downside in your portfolio, especially when this inflationary and also high levels of valuations on the indexes.
How do you balance people's need for, let's say, a high-risk investment, like, say, anything in crypto, versus, something that's really very, well, should be very steady and protecting on the downside, like bonds? Do you, Are bonds and crypto opposite these days? You know, are those the things that balance each other, or is it really still like bonds and tech stocks, or is it bonds and manufacturing? I mean, how do you think about that when you're working on balancing out a portfolio for somebody?
Well, I would say when you're talking about things like crypto, I mean, that's kind of an entity unto itself. The risk levels, I mean, I don't know if that has any correlation to anything. It's so volatile. But any type of risk level, it doesn't have to be so complicated. In other words, I would say, look, what percentage of your portfolio are you okay having in volatility? You know, it's very hard to figure out risk tolerance when the market keeps going up, right? People's mettle isn't tested until we start to see some serious downturns. We haven't seen it. You know, seriously, over a period, we've been in this bull market for a long time. So say, what percentage of your portfolio are you okay having in growth? What percentage of your portfolio are you really willing to have some risk exposure to? Okay, that's something, is it 60%? Is it 70%? You know, certainly I wouldn't tell someone near retirement to be 100% in the market. Again, unless everything, they had a pension, Social Security, and they were getting income that was not relying on the market. So that's how I would break it down. And then what am I going to own in growth? What am I going to own in my fixed piece that's going to give me some protection?
Right.
And that's how you can construct a portfolio. Again, it really doesn't need to be that complicated. If you look at John Bogle, you know, the pioneer in Vanguard, he used to say, take your age, subtract it from 100. That's what you should own in stocks. Now, that's a little oversimplified, but that's a plan. So
it is. Is it the plan that you think people should do? Because when I talk to people about that, and they're like, wait, but I'm 60, and that means that, you know, 40% should be in stock? That doesn't seem right anymore.
Yeah, I don't agree. I think that's fairly oversimplified. I think it can be used to illustrate a point here.
Mm-hmm.
But that was before bonds were paying 1.2% on a 10-year, right?
Yes.
That's right. When the 10-year's paying 4%. In fact, in the 90s, the 10-year was paying up to 8%. I know that sounds crazy. But,
yeah.
Yes, you have to. Nowadays, just the way this market is going and where the valuations are, bonds are very overvalued. There's no question. I would say it just, as the nature of the beast is, you're going to have more exposure to growth probably than you normally would. But just be conscious of what you own in growth. Like I said, you might want to have more value stocks, dividend-paying stocks that are at least paying you during the times. That's how I would construct my growth piece on my portfolio.
All right. Well, you know, Tom, we'll pick this up on Sunday morning and give people a few more ideas. Our show is called This Week in Wealth. You're listening to Tom Fortino of Alpha Wealth Group. Thanks for being with us today, Tom.
Thank you. Great talking to you as always, Lisa.